Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Underserved, the podcast for the rest of the tech industry. I'm your host, Andrew Jelina. I am lucky today to be joined in studio by Brian Adams, Senior QA Engineer. Brian, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you, Andrew. It's a pleasure to be here. Our studio looks great. Sound equipment is outstanding here.
Thank you. We strive to do well on a reasonable budget. I actually ended up soundproofing the whole thing myself, getting the stuff off of foambymail.com.
Oh, wow. It's definitely a padded room. It's nice. It's comforting.
Yes. So been doing QA for quite a while. How did you kind of get into it and get into the technology industry in general?
Yeah, I've been in the QA role for about 13 years or so now, and kind of working my way backwards. Before I started doing QA, I was doing help desk support at one point for a mortgage company and doing like hardware desktop support, and then moved on into a financial firm where I was doing more of trading support. And that led into a lot of dual tasks where I would be able to kind of test some bug fixes that might go out as a product support specialist. And that just kind of sparked an interest. I started liking playing around with the applications, validating bugs were being fixed or reporting any issues and troubleshooting those. So that was with a financial firm in Boston. And then I moved on into a QA role that opened up there. Got good friends with the manager in that group, and opening came up, and I stepped into that. And I've kind of been in that QA role since then through various firms.
Do a lot of manual, a lot of automated testing, mix of both?
My history has been mostly manual. Mm-hmm. I've done a little bit of automation, mostly with fitness, which is probably a tool that's not so widely used anymore. It's a tool that can be used just kind of do a lot of service level validation and kind of expected output. And yeah, easy enough to use. A lot of my experience with fitness is the developers have been doing more of like the fixture coding aspect of it. And I would kind of build the tables that would kind of integrate with those pieces.
Right on. Now, on manual testing, like, what does it take to be a good manual tester? Like, what did you learn on those first few years when you had cut into a QA role?
Yeah, I think my history with being on the help desk and support for end users helped a lot kind of in growing me of where I became a QA, because it was asking a lot of questions in regards to various functional aspects of the application that I would be supporting. So that kind of led into my QA role, where if I wasn't familiar with how something worked, I would kind of ask those questions and kind of do some exploring on my own to kind of get familiar with the product itself, just to get a good solid understanding of how end users would interact with that. And depending on the company and the access to the end users themselves, trying to talk to them. So just kind of expanding out of even the development group so you can get a real world look in regards to how it's being used. Because once requirements come through product managers and developers, and you're kind of discussing those in your development bubble, there's a lot of times where you kind of lose that sight of like, what is the real goal that we're trying to solve here? And how can I learn that? So just kind of asking those questions and talking with everybody who interacts with the application.
It's been my experience that the best QA folks are part BA, business analyst, and are interested in why are we doing this? What is the end goal? They have a good amount of user empathy. Like, what if I was sitting in that guy's seat? How would I use this? How should this work? What might I do that might break it? Just being able to kind of imagine all those scenarios and really think through from a user's perspective, how am I using this application? Not just from nuts and bolts, like, okay, I'm going to put a number into a text field and see if it dies, you know?
Right. Right. And that's so true. In regards to the QA wearing that BA hat, especially I feel like on the manual side of the house, where a lot of companies are going trying to strive towards 100% automation, you know, so those manual traditional QA testers and some companies, they're dwindling down a little bit and it's either the BAs are doing the testing or QA is moving more into a BA role. So I have found I've played that role in a number of different companies and I enjoy that too. And that's part of, you know, just being a part of the agile group, kind of being able to wear many hats and switch to different roles to kind of keep that group moving forward.
Now, if you've been in QA for 13 years, you've certainly seen Agile go from not existing to very prevalent. We've seen some teams where, you know, the dev team is Agile, but then QA is separated and there's kind of a throw it over the wall right. thing going on. And other places, they tend to take a member of the QA team and make them a first-rate member of the Agile team. And that seems to go better. What's been your experience over the years?
My experience mostly has been I'm in the group with development. We're sitting down in planning and story grooming together. So there's a member from, you know, each of the parties, development, BA, QA, and in some cases directly from the business. That's been most of my experience. But yes, I've been some small stints with some companies where QA is kind of over the fence and it's thrown over. And those situations, it's been harder to work. I think there's a lot that's lost in translation once it's kind of punted over the fence mm-hmm. to QA. And in some cases, it's just not as efficient too, because then you're kind of going back and forth. Could take time, could take days, depending on where the group's located. They're not co-located. It's just not as efficient.
So that kind of brings us up to our next topic, team communication. Can definitely be more difficult if there's a distributed and remote team, whether that remote team all sits together or everyone's sitting in their own house and virtually collaborating. What do you think is important to foster good team communication and keep it that throwing over the wall stuff to a minimum and keep everyone rowing in the same direction?
My best experience is when I'm located, co-located, same time zone. So you have that whole clock together. But there's been a couple companies I've worked with where half the development team is in India and half is here in the States. And those times, it seems the offshore teams have bent mostly towards the onshore hours. So they've kind of extended their hours later in the day. So to kind of create that overlap with the onshore team here. But in regards to that communication, I just think in some cases it just develops within the team. You need some sponsors in regards to the group itself to keep that communication going. Consistency with meetings, I think, is extremely important, where you know what to expect when you're going into a particular day or a week. And specifically when you think about those iterations that an agile group will go through, times where that communication is kind of broken down, I feel like some meetings are seen as optional and they're not held up to in regards to their times. When they're canceled, then there's that time where the team could be talking, whether it's over the phone or if they're in the same room, and whatever the agenda might be for that particular meeting. Sometimes it's not always stuck to, but at least the group is in there and they're starting to get away from their desks and they can start kind of talking about any of the struggles or concerns that they might have either with what they're actively working on or what's coming down the pipe.
So the cadence of the meeting and the location to kind of get you out of your desk mode and maybe not checking email so much during it.
Right.
I definitely agree those are important. What about leveraging the knowledge of others? Like, how do you kind of cross-pollinate skill sets and, you know, learn and teach when you are at new engagements?
I've had to definitely leverage the knowledge of others in my experience, because even before I got into the technical support side of things, I actually got my bachelor's degree in something completely non-technical. It was recreation management and policy. So I'd gone through my bachelor's and was looking to get into more of like a community parks and rec program. A lot of what I did growing up involved working with kids and camps. You know, I grew up in a home where there's a home daycare. So I was always around children and it's kind of what I enjoyed doing, and I love sports. So I attempted to start going in that direction, but with the job market at that point, got into a technical sales position and didn't have a whole lot of background with technology, you know, some basic computer science courses. So I had to look for those people out there that could kind of explain things, you know, to me in a way I could learn them, and leveraging the knowledge of those people that had the knowledge of what I was doing, and kind of ask those questions so I could kind of ramp up, trying to find smarter people out there than me, just kind of help me get to the point where I could succeed in what I was doing.
I definitely had the same experience from being a developer earlier in my career, wanted to do some things or learn some things that were outside the developer sphere. And this was definitely before being full stack guy or DevOps or someone who kind of ran the gamut. And so I found myself, you know, hey, I got to make friends with the ops guys and learn, like, all right, well, how do you install this on a server? And, you know, how do you back up databases and how do you restore them? And, you know, if you were going to lay out something, what would you do from a hardware perspective? What sort of currency do you use when you're the guy asking, like, what do you kind of offer in return? Or how do you get someone to do it when it may not be part of their job description?
Yeah, it's a good question, because there's a lot of times where, you know, we all have five things going on. You know, there's a list of to-dos that is never ending. But I feel like in a development group, when you're all kind of fighting the same fight and you're trying to get that product completed, get the story finished, those who are kind of experienced can see the benefit of the kind of sharing the knowledge and working together. You know, a developer who's coding a certain function, he knows it can only be well tested if that tester has a better understanding of what he's doing and why he might be doing it. So I think it's just that, going back to kind of communication, just kind of reaching out to them and just helping them understand that the more you help me is the more in the long run that we'll all be helping each other. And hopefully those defects that come later in the game, you know, in regards to like relating this back to testing, you know, won't be there. And we won't be up at, 11 at night, midnight, trying to fix something at the 11th hour, you know. Mm.
Sometimes I would be asking about stuff that wasn't even related to work, you know, or like for a project outside of work. So in that case, I would usually resort to either bribery or bartering. you know, hook someone up with a Amazon gift card, or one time I was working with some graphic designers and I was working on this little website of my own. And like most developers, I got it together and got it working, but it didn't look that great. And so I traded some favors with a graphic designer. She needed help coding something and scripting something, so I helped her do that. And then she made me some little icons and gave me some basic palette to work with. And the website ended up working a ton better. I also learned a little bit about graphic design and got more of an appreciation for what the folks do, because I was used to just receiving chopped up graphics and run from there, and didn't understand kind of what it took to create that, iterate on it, and make things look better.
I also think, kind of going further on that too, I've always had, I think, a good history of having some personal relationships with my coworkers too. So sometimes for me, it's not always just trying to extract like what we're working on at that time, but, you know, going to grab, you know, just a cup of coffee or going out for a walk. When you all know each other on a little bit more personal level, you're kind of more invested in each other. So I think for me, I'm just that way naturally with a lot of people that I surround myself with. And that helps too. If you have someone you're working with that you're kind of good friends with at the same time, and kind of discuss those questions that you might have about what you're working on together.
Underserved is fortunate to be sponsored by Syrinx, the developer-founded, developer-run software consulting company. Syrinx provides bolt-on software development capacity to accelerate your software projects. Syrinx works with your team and your methodology, on-site or off-site, to deliver on time and on budget. They work in any technology stack: React, Angular, Java, .NET, Python, front-end, back-end, NoSQL, MySQL, any SQL you can come up with, they have experts. You need architects, developers, QA folks, project managers, analysts, data scientists. Syrinx can help everywhere in the software development lifecycle, anywhere in the United States. Syrinx also does complete outsourced software project development if you need a turnkey end-to-end solution, or if you just need an individual resource to fill a development gap. With 100% of their resources onshore and a 20-year track record of success, you can trust Syrinx to get it right the first time. You can reach them today at syrinx.com or 888-579-7469. That is 888-5-SYRINX. Expand your software development bandwidth at syrinx.com. So to rewind a little bit to one of our other topics, working remotely. So let's say the team can't be in the same room. What tools, techniques, habits have you found over the years that make collaboration a little easier when the team is more distributed?
I'm big with talking. So if I can get on the phone with someone and talk about whatever it is that we need to discuss, I feel things can be flushed out a little bit quicker with regards to that. Most often, a phone call might not be the first option. So it's a lot of instant messaging and kind of pinging each other back and forth is my second preference. And then email, you know, for those questions that you don't need answered or topics that you don't need to discuss at that moment, I feel is the best. But just getting on the phone, having that conversation either with that individual or if it's a group of people, just getting everybody on a conference call does help. Currently, I'm working remotely probably about 90% of the time. Fortunately, you know, I live north of Boston and I can drive down to Boston for the day. So having that face-to-face, sometimes I do, even if there's no open questions or issues or topics that we need to discuss, just to get down there and just remind them that, you know, I'm still available, you know, that will flush out other things in the conversation.
Yeah, I definitely find you tend to find out things when you're talking in person that just may not happen when you're remote. So if you're within striking distance, yeah, some office time every once in a while, even if it's not required,
right,
almost always ends up bearing some sort of fruit. You talked a bit about the right mode of communications, like when to use IM, when to use email. This is one of my pet peeves / soapbox points. You know, I've always said that, yeah, IMing or texting is good if you kind of need an answer or know someone might be in a meeting and want to sneak an answer out of them and not interrupt them with a phone call, but that if there's any sort of subtlety or nuance or back and forth that needs to happen that's more complex than, you know, 10 words a piece, that, yeah, just setting up a time for a call is probably better. Email's good if you have to capture things. Now you mentioned asynchronously, like, okay, I can wait for the response, but also if you need to capture it or disseminate it to the team, I think that ends up being necessary. And then do you use any repository tools like a SharePoint or Jira, or where do you kind of capture institutional knowledge?
Well, currently most of what I use to capture what I'm doing at the current location is OneDrive. Mm-hmm. So that way, you know, if I'm here in the Syrinx office, which I am today, you know, it's easy just to pull up that folder. I just did that this morning and just took a look at some notes that I made last week. And then if I'm working from home, connect to the OneDrive. So that's what I'm using right now for both of my work. And then I have my own, you know, personal OneDrive account as well. And that helps too. Even on a personal side, there's always those documents where might be doing something, you know, at home. I have three kids, so like sharing like a calendar or something to that event where you can kind of access from wherever you are, whether it's on your computer or phone. But in regards to the team I'm working with right now, what we're using mostly is Jira.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that works, you know, for what we do as a team. But there are other options. I mean, there's the shared folders, the classic shared folders that you can put documents into and requirements and all of that.
I'll definitely plus one the OneDrive recommendation. we're kind of underutilizing it here at Syrinx for a while. Like, we are Office 365 subscribers. Mm-hmm. So I'm already paying the monthly for that. So I'm over it. Normally, I'm not a big fan of subscription software, like having to pay every month. But with that, the convenience is worth it. We've paid for it. Okay. And they give you a pretty big space. I want to say a terabyte or something like that as part of a larger Office 365 subscription. And like you said, you can have multiple accounts. You could have a personal and a work, and they make it pretty easy to do that. Where I don't remember Dropbox being that easy to keep segregated like that. Right. And then it's, you know, integrated in with Windows Explorer. So it becomes one of the destinations to save stuff. Been a bigger fan of it lately. Kind of been moving away from Google Drive and Dropbox and using OneDrive much more. Any other tools? You use Hangouts or Skype or anything else to communicate with the team while you're remote?
Yeah, Skype is used for all like our instant messaging. And that's useful too. And I used that in a previous company. Currently, right now, Skype messages are not saved with the company that I'm working in. So that used to be, that policy was different, where you could kind of go back and see that conversational history. If you and I were talking about something and you sent me a few steps on how to do what I needed to do, I could look back, you know, in 2 weeks to kind of find that, just as you would an email. So the current company I'm working for, they have a policy where they don't save those conversations. And I found out how much I used that. You know, you just didn't think about it. You close the window and it's still saved. Now I close the window and it's lost. So I have to kind of have a practice where, you know, another step where if something's important, I just have to copy that over into that shared location.
I've noticed that with Skype, you might have long-running conversations. You might be able to refer back, or it might be harder. I've found myself copying and pasting stuff out of there into Evernote or something else searchable, just to be able to hang on to it. And I noticed with Slack, unless you're paying for it, they also limit how far back you can see in conversations. If you pay, I think they let you spool back to the beginning of time. Yeah, so Brian is working with a financial services client. A lot of financial services clients will set a policy of retention of not at all or X time, so they're not having to hang on to all of this data forever and, you know, possibly have to regurgitate it later on if there's any questions or anything. It's just easier not to hang on to it at all,
right?
And make that policy. We all do stuff besides sit at keyboards and bang out code or QA scripts or test results or documents. So in your free time, what do you do for fun?
I run for fun. So it's been about 7 years or so since I started kind of getting into more of long distance running. Mm-hmm. About 3 or 4 years ago, my wife also kind of got into running. So it's something that we can do together, just kind of semi date night, you know, but we'll go out. And never thought that I would have been doing this for fun, you know, for, you know, like 10 years ago, but we'll go out for, you know, like 5-6 mile run, you know, if there's someone there to watch the kids, of course. And then I've enjoyed that. It's been something that I've always liked sports, like I said earlier, something that has been able to keep me active and it's efficient. You know, you can go out for a half hour and then come right back, as opposed to, I've never been able to kind of get into the golfing world. It's just much more time consuming sometimes, but I imagine I'll be there at some point, just not now. So just kind of keep me active. That's primarily what I do for fun. I'm trying to, my wife and I are trying to get our kids involved as much as we can. I know I never enjoyed running when I was younger. If it involved just strictly running, you know, if it was playing, doing basketball or anything that involved running, that was fine. But just to go out for like a 3 or 4 mile run, I've never thought I would have been doing that as a kid.
Now, do you gamify it or use apps at all to track your progress? Or
yeah, I use MapMyRun. Mm-hmm. I'd kind of record those, and you can set routes with that as well, share them. I usually run by myself or with my wife, but there are times, you know, when we're training, there are certain people in town that I run with. So one of us might create that route, share it, and we'll kind of meet up at the start location at whatever specified time. So MapMyRun is primarily what I used. I've tried a couple others. I think Nike offers one that I've tried, with one of their running watches at one point, but I think Matt My Run is kind of the way to go.
Now you jam out the tunes on Spotify, or what are you doing to?
No, I usually run with nothing because you know I like to kind of be aware of my surroundings, hear those cars coming towards you or behind you. It's scary. There's been so many times where you look out on the road, and we've all seen some of us, you know, do that ourselves. You know, we're not looking at the road; we're looking at our phone. So seeing that when you're out there as a runner with no protection,
yeah, a little scary.
Yeah. So I mean, there are times like if it's a really long run and I'm familiar with the area and wide roads, sidewalks, then I'll throw Spotify on because it is a little bit more fun to run with some entertainment, because sometimes just looking at that road the whole time can be a little daunting.
Yeah. What about treadmills? Do you ever do that? Maybe when it's raining or?
I try to get outside as much as I can. We do have a treadmill in the basement, so that is used sometimes more. It depends on actually what shows I'm watching, because sometimes that treadmill time is the time for me to watch the show that I might like that the other family members don't like. So if I'm really into a series, then I might find myself running a little bit more on the treadmill for a couple weeks than getting outside.
Right on. What is the longest that you've run, either in competition or out of competition?
I've run 4 full marathons, so it would have to be the 26.2. Yeah.
My brothers-in-law have gotten into the, I don't know if it's ultramarathoning or what it's called, when you run like 100 miles or 50 miles or whatever out in the woods half of the time. That seems like a bit much. I can't imagine it.
One of the motivating factors of me getting into more of a long distance running is actually a book, Born to Run. I forgot who the author is, but he did, and I think still does, ultra marathons, and it's just insane. Some of the distances some of these people can go, it doesn't seem like it could be humanly possible. And I've felt that after a marathon, it's like, you know, you can barely go one more step, and how are these people doing this for days? And putting themselves like in extreme, you know, temperatures. You know, sometimes, you know, they're out there in the desert doing this in 100 plus degree weather, where they have to run on the white strip so their shoes don't burn.
Ugh. So if you're not running, what else are you into?
Well, I have 3 children, you know, happily married. So we try to do as much family things as we can. You know, as my oldest is 13, so he's sometimes not into the whole family thing, but we do try to kind of do family activities. Like we indicated, we have the kids. We do 5Ks once in a while with them, whether it's running or walking. But I also am just started up another season in a bowling league. That's something I've been doing for a few years now. In the town that I live in, they just put a bowling alley in about 6 or 7 years ago. And when that came, I knew that my calling was there and I had to join in. Not that I've ever been good, but it's always fun to get out there on a Thursday night with the guys.
It's a good, you know, low stress, knock back some beers, knock down some pins.
The funny thing is even though I've been doing it about 5 or 6 years, I saw a slight incline with my performance and it's kind of plateaued from there. There's some guys have gone the next step and, you know, you get their own ball and kind of really try to become one with that. But you know, I just kind of go into the alley, grab whatever's there and just hang out.
Sling it down there?
Yes, sling it down there.
I'm surprised they're building new ones. I saw a new one on Martha's Vineyard that seems to be slamming, especially if the weather's bad. And, you know, it's all brand new glistening wood and pins. And they seem to do a pretty brisk business with bar food and beers and just have it ripping the whole time. They don't have an arcade there, but I would expect that too. What town is the one you're in?
In Tewksbury.
Okay. Yeah.
So they have the arcade. So I think a lot of their success is with various functions and birthday parties. Yeah. And now the leagues that are starting up, you can tell the wait staff is pretty psyched that they have solid business, you know, for whatever evening. And, you know, they're getting some pretty good tips.
That's nice. Everybody wins.
Yeah.
As we wrap up, any other kind of words to the wise or things that you think folks should consider?
Well, I would say, I mean, kind of tying in, we talked about, you know, some work and some play is just kind of having that balance. As I've, you know, progressed through my working years, finding, especially having a family now, is it's important to have that time and that balance with the family. And that's one thing that's been so great with my position now at Syrinx, is being able to work remotely and having that time. I'm not on the road to have more of that time with the family and the kids, helping them when they get home from school and being there. So it's just that work-life balance. And I think we've all seen those people that are kind of pushing the pedal a little bit too hard and burning themselves out a little bit, or maybe becoming a little begrudging in regards to, what they're doing. But once that balance is there, and whatever it is, for me, it's running and being active. For others, maybe it's something else that's technical outside of what they're doing technically. And I know you've got this podcast going now, and it's been great. I've been listening to all the episodes. And so I think we all need some type of outlet outside of work, I guess, is what it boils down to.
Well, thank you for listening and subscribing. We appreciate you coming in, and glad we got to see you, just like I'm sure the client's glad when you get to get in the office and have some FaceTime. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And look forward to speaking with you again soon on Underserved.